welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 291 of the podcast. And I'm pre-recording this because as this airs, I am on the west coast of Oregon in Lincoln City attending a masterclass workshop with Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush, who I definitely count among my author mentors. So I'm actually super excited to be meeting them in person, and I'll be learning loads this week. I'm attending the masterclass as a participant, not a speaker. So I'm really exciting about that. I will likely be tweeting from at the Creative Pen, and I will definitely be blogging about what I learn in the coming weeks. I'll also be quite tired as this goes out, as I will have flown from Denver, where I will have been speaking at Digital Commerce Summit, and will also have learned a ton from that. And hopefully there'll be a blog post on that this week. That's actually, I was speaking there on, as I record this, I will be speaking, but as you hear this, I was speaking on intellectual property assets as books. And I was the only speaker on writing and, well, books. So there'll be a ton of stuff about making money online and digital commerce. So very excited about that. Keep an eye on the blog, on Twitter, and there might even be some Facebook live video on the facebook.com/thecreativepen page. Okay, so today I have an interview with Kevin J. Anderson, which is super exciting because I guess alongside Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush, Kevin is one of those veteran authors who's been in publishing for many years and has, he has 140 plus books and over 23 million sold in print, not even counting ebooks. But he's also someone who's adapting to the new indie world. So he indie publishes, he traditionally publishes, he's written in things like the Dune world. Pretty amazing guy, really. And I love his no-nonsense approach to writing and publishing, and he continues to try new things. I also feel when I interview people like Kevin, I'm really impressed for one, but also I see him as being ahead of me on the journey that I am on. I don't have 140 books, so I'm not at his level of success yet. But when I do, I fully expect to be where he is. So to me, 23 million books sold is an achievable goal. It will just take a bit longer. And don't know exactly how old Kevin is, but I think he would probably be at least 20 years older than me. So I think we just carry on. I mean, basically, we write books, we put them out there in whatever way we do, and life continues, and we get there eventually. So I hope that encourages you too. It's a really interesting conversation. Also, very excited, we are in a Pulse Pounders bundle together, a thriller bundle. Basically, if you haven't seen these bundles before, it's kind of like a box set, but though all the files are separate. It's sold from a separate website. You can go and have a look at thecreativepen.com/bundle, B-U-N-D-L-E, and that will take you to storybundle.com, where we have the Pulse Pounders thriller bundle. Now, there's books from Kevin, myself, Gates of Hell is in the bundle, Jonathan Mabry has a book there, and Jonathan is, I mean, I love some of his books. So I'm super excited to be in a bundle with some of these big name authors. And the idea of the bundle is basically they're not sold on Amazon or Kobo or anywhere else. They are sold separately from a separate website. So the money is split between the authors and also with a charity. So it's one of those kind of new models of selling books, which is exciting. Now, You should be able to find the bundle at thecreativepen.com/bundle. But as I record this a couple of weeks early, it hasn't gone live yet. So I'm trusting that it will be out as you listen to this. If it's not out, check again next week. Or any problems or questions, tweet me at thecreativepen or email me joanna@thecreativepen.com. Okay, also coming this week is the Indie Author Fringe for the Frankfurt Book Fair. Now, this is an online conference on the 22nd of October. You can find more details at indieauthorfringe.com, and this is run by the Alliance of Independent Authors. And again, it is free and it features some of the biggest names in indie publishing doing some really useful sessions. For example, going exclusive with KDP, tools for helping you sell more books, completing your Amazon tax interview, which is super useful, how to use Twitter cards, productivity tips, maximizing international exposure, contract clauses to watch out for, and much more, including CJ Lyons and me on when is the right time to go full time as an author. So check that out at indieauthorfringe.com, a free online conference, and the it will be there on the 22nd of October, or the sessions will still be there after the 22nd of October. So definitely check that out. So no tweets or emails this week as this is pre-recorded, but I will be responding to you if you do tweet or email me. So please do keep sending them, because I love to hear from you and I love that this is more like a conversation these days. I enjoy hearing your reaction to the interviews when you tweet me at The Creative Pen or email me joanna@thecreativepen.com, and it means a lot to me that you make time to connect. So thank you for sending them through. So today's episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and a word from our sponsor is coming up soon. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a massive thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. I will be banking up all the new patrons until mid-November. So thank you to everyone. I will have emailed you if you are a new supporter on Patreon, but I will read the names out mid-November. So I really do appreciate your Patreon support. Demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And of course, if you are a Patreon supporter, you get the extra monthly Q&A audio, and you can get that and a whole year's worth of backlist. That's at least 6 or 7 more hours of listening to me by contributing just $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month. So less than a coffee a month. You can check that out at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you. Okay, here's a word from Kobo, and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hey, Creative Pen fans. This is Camille Mofidi, the European manager for Kobo Writing Life based in Paris. Did you know you could publish and sell your ebooks very easily all over the world with Kobo, reaching an international audience in 190 countries? Plus, you can now benefit from 2 brand new features on our website, readers' reviews and series numbers, that will help raising awareness and visibility for all your books. For more details, please visit our blog www.kobowritinglife.com, where these features are fully presented. Thank you for listening, and now back to your wonderful host, Joanna.
Hello everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Kevin J. Anderson. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joanna, and hello, everybody. I'm sitting in my office in Colorado, where I would normally be writing, but I'm talking to you instead.
Fantastic. So just in case people don't know who you are, I'll just do a little introduction. Kevin is the multi-award-winning and internationally best-selling author of over 140 books, selling 23 million copies in 30 languages. He's written numerous novels in the Star Wars, X-Files, and Dune universes, as well as his own sci-fi, fantasy, thriller, steampunk, and horror books. He runs Wordfire Press with his wife and fellow author Rebecca Moesta, has edited numerous anthologies, and also written comics, games, and song lyrics. And Kevin, that's just incredible. And I wanted to just kind of immediately reverse on this and ask you about self-doubt, because people listening are going to be like, oh my goodness, Kevin's like just done everything. Do you still feel self-doubt, and do you still suffer from some of these things that people think are just for beginning writers?
Well, don't be silly. Of course, I'm too busy to suffer from self-doubt. I mean, I don't have. I would suppose a a surgeon suffers from doubt every once in a while, or a teacher, but this is what I do. I have these stories in my head. I have all the characters. I've like you wrote, I've written 140 books and who knows how many short stories. And I've always got the books in my head, and I know how to write them. This is what I do. Maybe like a soccer player or something. I know what I'm doing, and I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And my entire life is focused on what story do I tell next, and what characters do I do next. And I have either notes for the next four or five books that I've got planned, and I've got things in my head for different series. I'm plotting a new fantasy series right now, so part of my brain is working on cultures and history and the grand storyline, because I do like Game of Thrones huge things rather than just one little person's story as he goes to the coffee shop at the end. I'm much bigger stories than that, so they're very intricate plotting exercises, and to me, that's just the most enjoyable thing. I love doing it. So I don't sit around huddled in a corner going, oh no, which verb should I use next? And
no, that's fantastic. And actually, I've been reading a lot of your blog posts, and you said that your goal when you got published was, my goal was not just to be a published author, but a successful author, so I could make my living at it. So I wondered, I mean, apart from your obvious work ethic, what separates those who make a very good living at writing from those authors who just scrape by or have to do something else to pay the way?
Well, I want to be clear. It wasn't me saying that I want to make a lot of money as a writer, because that's a pretty foolish thing to say. Almost nobody ever does that. But what I wanted was to be successful enough so that that's what I could do for my job. Many authors work a part-time job. They work in a restaurant, or they have a clerk's job somewhere, or they work in a bank, and then they go home and they get to write for 1 or 2 hours in the evening. I wanted to write all the time, and the only way you can write all the time is if you can pay your bills. Now, the other option would be to marry a fabulously wealthy spouse, and that didn't turn out quite the same. My wife is also a successful writer, but I didn't check that she was fabulously rich before we got married. So we had to make our own way. And a lot of it involved like being very prolific, writing a lot. The days of mulling around and writing one book and hoping that it's a smash success and selling a million copies, that almost never happens. And so I was able to write, and my books sold fairly well. And then I got asked to write some Star Wars books, which of course made my exposure greatly increased. And I became a best-selling author, which led to other book offers. And it became a process of writing as much as I could and only picking the projects that I really enjoyed, but also being able to pay my bills with it, which to me was the great goal, was so that I could be a writer as a career rather than maybe I published a book once or twice.
Mm. And I've heard you mention your popcorn theory of writing. How does that tie into what you're talking about?
Well, I've given this talk in many, many writers' conferences. I call it the popcorn theory, where if you are because I've written so many different things and tried so many different things, and you send out proposals and you send out ideas. To me, it's a much longer story that I would normally be telling. But if you're making popcorn, like the old-fashioned way, if you're in a pan over a burner in the stove, you put a lot of popcorn kernels in and you heat it up. But you never know at any one time which popcorn kernel is going to pop or which direction it's going to fly. So you can't just take one popcorn kernel and bank on it. You can't say, this is the only thing I'm going to do and I hope it's going to pop. You try a lot of different things and you put a lot of popcorn kernels in the pan and you add a lot of heat, and sooner or later something's going to start popping. But I could never tell if it's going to be my zombie private detective series or my big space opera series or my epic fantasy or even my writing instruction books or something. You never know. An author that I met many years ago was extremely successful. His name was R.L. Stine, and he wrote Well, but I'm not going to say what you think I am. He was very successful by writing a self-help book called What Color is Your Parachute?
And no, he didn't write that.
R.L. Stein, and he became very popular with it. And then he tried something different, which was the horror books for little kids. And he called them Goosebumps. And, of course, they took off all over the place. But he got his start by writing What Color is Your Parachute? So you would never predict that from that author, because he tried different things. And luckily for him, he had a lot of popcorn pop on those.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's amazing. Because, yeah, I've seen R.L. Stein, Bob Stein at Thriller Fest, and was like, wow, you know, he must have always been a kid's author. But that's amazing, because a lot of people would have read that book as well, The Parachute. That's amazing. So I wanted to ask you there, because you've obviously got you've written your own series, and like you said, they're kind of mega big story series. You've also written in other universes, other, you know, Dune and Star Wars and all that. And you talk about this popcorn theory too. So many authors struggle with how many books or how much time should they spend on one series if they feel like it's going nowhere. You know, some people are saying you need 3 books in a series before readers take notice. Or, you know, if people are planning these massive series, how long do you think people should put the energy into one of them before trying something new if it's not popped?
Well, they're not going to like this answer, but I would suggest you try everything anyway, that you write your series that you like, but then at the same time, write a completely different book, because that might take off, or a different book as you're nurturing and cultivating your series. Because if you have a Egyptian mummy homicide investigator or something like that, and you love the series and you're writing one book and then the next book, and if you write 5 books and then nobody ends up reading them, then you've wasted all that time. But if you're writing those books because you enjoy them while you're also writing What Color is Your Parachute and you're trying something else, there may be another popcorn kernel that pops. I started my own series of Dan Shamble Zombie PI several years ago. I loved it. This was completely different from I'm well known as writing giant epic, usually science fiction, but also fantasy. And when I wrote this one, I turned it into my agent and sent it around to publishers. Now, you remember the credits that you mentioned? I've got 23 million books in print, and a whole bunch of my regular publishers turned it down because they said, well, Kevin Anderson doesn't write humorous horror. He writes giant science fiction. And I said, but here's this book right here that I wrote. So we ended up selling it to a different publisher, and we sold 3 books, and I wrote all 3 books so that they could bring them out very, very swiftly. And then I contacted some of my other friends who wrote series like that, Jim Butcher and Kelly Armstrong and Patricia Briggs and Sherilyn Kenyon. And every one of them told me that it took at least 6 books before their series took off. And my publisher published the first 2 of those Dan Shamble books and said, it's not taking off, so we're just going to finish this up. So then Wordfire, my own publishing house, has then released it. We're going to do another one. And I'm actually making more money now from my own publishing efforts than what they did. But, you know, publishing has changed so dramatically that it used to be a publisher would invest in Jim Butcher, and they would stick with his series for 6 books until it suddenly skyrocketed. But now apparently they will stick with you for 1 book. If it doesn't skyrocket, then they're moving on to something else. And I think everybody's scrambling. We always used to know how publishing worked, and now we don't know anything anymore.
And I want to come back on the publishing, but before we move on to that, I want to ask you about your writing process, because you said there about writing multiple books at the same time, which many authors struggle with. And also I read that you dictate and that you walk a lot. So can you talk about your own writing process and whether you still walk while dictating?
Well, my hair is still a little sweaty right this minute because I wrote a chapter before this interview. I was walking around the bike path in the streets around my house, and I was watching my wristwatch, and I was walking very quickly because I knew I had to be back here in 10 minutes, and I was getting to a very dramatic part and trying to wrap it all up. I feel like I'm a storyteller. I know my novel. I have it all outlined. I have all the 100 chapters or so blocked out with maybe 3 or 4 sentences of this is what happens in this chapter, and this is where it begins, and this is where it ends. And I will take those notes with me, and I will, I live in Colorado, so I'm in the mountains. It's very beautiful scenery, and I'll go out walking with my digital recorder and just tell the story in my head. Now, all writers, they think up a sentence and then they type it. Well, I think up the sentence and then I speak it. If you actually consider it, I'm going through far fewer steps than somebody who types it, because I can just think it and talk rather than mentally deconstruct the sentences into words and then break those words down into letters and then type those letters on a keyboard so that it comes up on the screen. That's like seven extra steps to type your stuff. So I get to go out walking, and the other advantages to that is I can be on a trail somewhere or a smooth bike path and just be away from the telephone and away from the computer and away from the nagging little Facebook icon that wants me to check my Facebook status and Twitter or whatever. So I can just sink entirely into the story that I'm writing. And I usually walk along the trail until I've dictated one chapter. Then I turn around and I have just enough time to dictate another chapter on the way back home.
Mm. And did
I have a typist. I email the audio files to a typist who transcribes it. Sometimes I'll transcribe it myself if I'm in a real hurry, but I'd rather spend the hour instead of transcribing it, dictating another couple of chapters so that I can move forward.
Yeah. And this year, because of you, I've actually been trying dictation, although using Dragon, and I'm finding they're sort of turning the brain into speaking quite difficult. So did you used to type and then move into dictation, or do you have any tips for people struggling with that?
Well, I used to type, but I would get so frustrated because I would think of things faster than I could type them. And I wanted a way to preserve it better. And also, I was just getting distracted all the time with so many people around the house and the doorbell ringing and the phone. And I wanted to just concentrate on my stories. But the big advice that I would give for you and for other writers to get started with it is don't try to write that way. The best way to start is to do like notes or brainstorming that way. And as a perfect example, say you're making up a character who is a school teacher on Mars, and her name is Joanna. So you just go with your recorder and just go for a walk, and just, it's almost like free association. And Joanna came to Mars for this reason, and her husband does this on Mars, and she's a teacher because she had a miscarriage and couldn't have her own children, but she still loves children and she wanted to make a difference. And her father disowned her because he didn't want her to leave Earth because he'll never see her again, because the father turns out that he's got a degenerative muscular disease and she won't be there to take care of him. And look, I'm just making all this up right now, but you can make all this up while you're walking and preserve it in the recorder. It's not like it has to be perfect sentences, because nobody needs to see this other than you, but it's helping you, your imagination, think of things and recording it so that you don't have to remember it an hour later when you're trying to think, now, why did her father hate her for going away? And it's just, I love doing stuff because I can go for a walk and there's all these ideas will come. And so then I would finish maybe her character background, and then I would switch to her father's background. And how does he think of her, and start describing that? These aren't writing chapters. This is just building up the characters that will be in my head. And it's the act of walking and just dictating it, I find very liberating, so that I can, I don't have to write down notes, because that's distracting to me. There's a process, the physical process of, if I'm walking through a forest or if I'm just plain walking, just the exercise behind it helps my creative juices to flow. And I've read studies where that happens, that if you're just sitting there in your chair staring at your computer, you have far fewer like creative lightning bolts going on than if you are out around. And of course, if I'm in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado and I'm seeing beautiful trees and waterfalls and wildflowers and everything, that certainly helps add the sensory input as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so coming back on publishing, because of course you've been in publishing a long time now, and you've done it in all kinds of different ways. So how has publishing changed, you think? And I mean, has it really just dramatically changed in the last 5 years, or do you think it's been changing for a longer period?
I think the huge difference was probably in the past 5 years or so. My first novel was published in 1988, and I published short stories before that. And I had spent my whole life growing up and reading about publishing and Publishers Weekly and understanding how publishing and bookselling works, because that's what I wanted to do for my career. I wanted to be a writer, and I understood how it all worked. But it was really about 5 years ago when it was. Now, you can look at it two ways. You can either look at it as total and complete Armageddon in the industry, or you can look at it as an industrial revolution, because a lot of things hugely changed. We went from riding horses to having automobiles. I mean, it's entirely different the way we did things in bookselling, in publishing, in distribution, and in the author's role for Simon & Schuster, as I did for many years. I was the author who wrote a book, but then there was this gigantic army of people who would do the production and proofreading and graphic design and publicity and editing and distribution. And I mean, all of this stuff. And the author was quite separated from many of those steps, which I will say out of the side of my mouth was very nice, because then I could go and write my next book. But a lot of entertainment and technology has similarly changed. If you look at movies, what if you were the person who banked your entire fortune, your entire career on opening a line of videotape rental stores? I don't know how many of those thought that videotapes would vanish in the course of like 6 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, when DVDs came out, poof, they all went away. And then DVDs were replaced by Blu-rays, and we all had to go and get a new different player. And now even DVD rentals and stuff, we're all doing streaming. And who knows what's next? Or music was ahead of publishing as far as like ebooks and everything, that there were the giant record companies, and you had to be signed by a record company to get your album made or your CD made. And then people realized that they could do their own CDs and release them, because it's not that expensive to produce your own CD. And then you would sell them. And then certain bands would do Kickstarters to fund their own CDs, which is unheard of, because the record label always paid for the production of everything. Well, here they're doing it themselves. It's more of a democratic, homegrown, they can do it all. And again, to keep going with the analogy of the bands, what happens is bands would then play around in bars and nightclubs, and at the end, and they would get paid for that. They perform. And then at the end of it, they would sign autographs and they would sell their CDs. And if you're having a CD that you've produced that costs you $2 and you're selling it for $15, you're pocketing a lot of profit. If the big record company makes that CD, you, the artist, might make 30 cents or something like that. So it's a dramatic difference. But again, on the other side, it's a hell of a lot more work. Instead of just being a songwriter sitting at home, you've got to be a touring band. You got to go to nightclubs. You got to book your acts. You got to perform in front of people. You have to then do the autograph. You got to lug your equipment around to the next gig, and you got to do it again. And that's how we authors have been transitioning, because they're, you know, the major bookstore chains, Borders, which was in the U.S. and the U.K. and around the world, they went out of business. We just had a major one in the U.S. called Hastings, which was a bookstore and media CDs and DVDs. They just went out of business, which was another big blow. And of course, we have Amazon who's distributing things. But Amazon treats indie authors as any other publisher. They'll put up a book that I publish myself right next to a book that Bantam publishes, and the reader who's going to buy a Kevin Anderson book doesn't notice the difference if I've done my cover design right. So it's advantageous a little bit for me, because I've worked in the industry for so long, I know how to do it. It's a disadvantage to a lot of the newer writers who frankly don't know what they're doing. They don't know anything about typesetting or cover design or how books are supposed to look and things. So I can sort of spot an amateur book from a mile away, but there's also a lot of different steps involved in it. It's I'm sure you've got hardware stores or home decorating stores where they will tell poor gullible young couples that they don't need to hire a professional, that they can remodel their kitchen all by themselves with a few tools at home. Well, it's a lot harder than that. You need to know what you're doing, and that is what the indie publishing is. Now, there have been some people that have been fabulously successful in it. There have been other people who put up a book and five people buy it. In fact, that's the more likely story, because that's, I think, the average ebook that goes up sells something like 5 to 10 copies. Hmm. Authors have to find innovative ways to sell their books or to draw attention to their books. Authors have banded together to form sort of co-ops or marketing collectives and united fronts so that they can pool their resources and maybe hire a publicist together or something. And I wish I could tell everybody the answer. Well, maybe I won't, because I'd keep it for myself. But nobody quite knows what works or what doesn't. What worked for one person today isn't going to work for a different person tomorrow. And it's a constantly moving target, which, again, I'm finding exhausting, because I had published 100 books and had, you know, dozens and dozens of bestsellers in the old model, and suddenly I have to learn an entirely different sport if I'm going to keep playing in the game.
Yeah, well, I think what's interesting, listening to you and, of course, Dean Wesley Smith and, you know, Christine Catherine Rush and other long-term traditionally published authors who have then kind of embraced the indie way, there's those type of authors and like yourself, and then there's these other traditionally published authors who literally want nothing to do with indie. So you're a sci-fi author as well, and you mentioned the Industrial Revolution, and maybe we're seeing AI coming on board. What do you see happening in the next 5 to 10 years? Do you see that those authors who just reject this model are going to disappear, or, you know, will big publishing change, or will small presses like your own take over? What do you think?
Oh, I think my Wordfire Press is going to take over the whole world and pull that billions of dollars. I don't know. I do think that the bigger traditional publishers are frantically trying to review their own model and stay afloat and figure out how to revive. Now, I want to emphasize, though, I'm still writing for traditional publishers. I had two books out this week alone from Tor Books, two hardcover books, my last Dune novel and my last Seven Sons novel. Both came out on the same day in hardcover from a traditional publisher. I've got another book I'm writing for them, and I will be doing a proposal. I want to do the popcorn theory, have my popcorn kernels all over the place. It would be wonderful if people would buy countless copies of our Wordfire Press books, because we're supporting our authors and keeping them going. But you never know, and you can't really count on only one possible solution. It has changed so much in the past 5 years. I'm not sure I can say what's going to happen, because my numbers are probably wrong. 5 years or 6 years ago, the most popular reading device was the Sony e-reader. Well, nobody reads on Sony e-readers anymore. I don't know what happened. I don't know what was wrong with them or whatever. I have a Kindle, but I spend more of my time reading on a Kobo. There are people that read on their iPads. People that read on their iPhones. To me, it's the device is just a way to deliver the words. I don't really care whether it's a print book or an electronic book if I'm trying to just read the story. Now, I'm old fashioned. I like to have a very nice hardcover book or a leather bound book. That's the enjoyable reading experience for me. You know, to print a hardcover book and then to ship it to a bookstore and try to sell it, as opposed to uploading an electronic file and have people buy it with no, you know, warehousing costs or production costs for me, that's a lot more viable way of doing things. Mm-hmm. I really don't know what's going to happen. I'm trying to watch and stay one step ahead. But I do know that you know, there's a giant asteroid coming our way, and I would rather be a mammal than a dinosaur, and I would like to survive.
Fantastic. Now, one of the things that Wordfire Press is doing is doing story bundles, and I'm going to be in one, which I'm very excited with you, Pulse Pounders, the thriller bundle. So, first of all, tell people, you know, what is the idea behind the story bundle? Why is it a good idea for authors and for readers? Because many people are quite skeptical of that kind of model.
Well, this is one of those things I mentioned about innovative ways that new writers have to figure out, and indie publishers. How do we get attention for our books, and how do we get readers for our books? And one of the ways that I'm working with is Story Bundle, and there's another company I've worked with called Humble Bundle. There are how do I describe this? It's a bunch of authors get together, sort of like a collective club, and it's 10 to 15 books that we just put together in a grab bag, that here is 15 books that are all on the same subject, like in the one that we have coming up, is just a thriller bundle. So everything here is a thriller. Now, some of them are, you know, traditional suspense thrillers. Other of them are more like fast-paced action books, and some are edgy horror books and stuff, but it's all under the umbrella of thrillers. So there's 15 thriller books, and they're all ebooks, all ebook formats, and there's a minimum price. I think it's $5, but you pay what you want. Do you feel that this is worth $15 or $20 or $100? I mean, it depends on what you feel like. You name your own price above a certain minimum. You pay it. It immediately, you get downloaded all 15 of these books. A portion of that money goes direct to charity, and our chosen charity is the Challenger Learning Center for Space Education. I'm on the board of that, and it was founded by the woman whose husband was the commander of the Challenger mission. So it's to promote science and education among kids. That's probably more appropriate for some of the science fiction bundles we're doing, but it's my charity, so we put it in there. And all of the authors promote. Everybody pushes the bundle of the book. So you, of course, Joanna, are doing this interview, and you'll be doing some other things. And it only runs for 3 weeks, and everybody promotes, and you get as many people as possible to download the bundle. And the great thing is, it's almost like you're going to a buffet. It's an all you can eat, and you get downloaded these. I don't remember if it's exactly 15 books in our bundle. It's something like that. And you get the whole batch of books, and read half of them if you want. And the other interesting thing, we've got some big name authors in it and some newer authors in it. So it's a great way for if you're a fan of Jonathan Mayberry, who is one of our authors in the bundle, he'll bring his fans to buy the bundle to get his book. But then they might read Joanna Penn's book, or they might read Colm Sanson Regan's book, who is one of our authors in the book, and I'm sure nobody's heard of him. Donald J. Bingle, he's another one of our authors. You've probably never heard of him, but you maybe have heard of Kevin J. Anderson. I've got a book in there, or Dean Wesley Smith, or Matt Buckman. We try to mix the bigger authors and the newer authors so that you get a real, it's a grab bag. It's a nice sample. I've got one that's running right now, which will be over by the time you upload this one, but it's an epic fantasy bundle that it's got something by me and by Brandon Sanderson and by Tracy Hickman, and also by a lot of newer authors. And it's this wonderful way to fill up your reading device with more books than you can possibly read. And then the next bundle comes out, but it's a limited time. It only runs for 3 weeks. And then it's gone. And then all of the money is like within days divided up among the titles in the book. So if you're an indie author, you'll get paid for your book. And we had one bundle that sold like 4,000 copies within 3 weeks. That is enough copies, if it were tracked, that's enough copies of any one of those titles to show up on the New York Times bestseller list. That's a lot of copies going out there. Well, that doesn't mean everybody reads every title in it, but how do you guarantee everybody reads every book that gets bought either? So it's just, I guess the nice thing about it is that this is a way for a group of authors to work together, to pool their efforts, to combine their fan bases, but also to give something cool for the readers. Because as a reader, if you're going to spend $15 and get 12 new novels that you haven't read, that's a bargain. And these aren't like ridiculous how do I say this, amateur books that somebody just uploaded without being edited. These are, again, Jonathan Mayberry and Jeffrey Marriott and Mike Barron and Dean Wesley Smith and Kevin Anderson and Joanna Penn. These are authors that have established themselves and produced some pretty good stuff. So, I mean, the way to find it is storybundle.com. And they run one or two at a time. They're often comics bundles or gaming bundles, and I work with them to put Workfire Press books, and then of course I bring in other guest authors like yourself.
Yeah, fantastic. And people can find that. I've done a direct link at thecreativepen.com/bundle. So that will be there for the limited time. Now, I've got my Gates of Hell in there, which is a supernatural thriller. Just tell people about the book that you've got in there as well, so they know which of yours to look out for.
Well, I've got one that I co-authored with Doug Beeson. It's called Virtual Destruction. And Doug and I met when we were both working at a top secret government research lab in the U.S. It's a nuclear weapons design lab. Then that's where we were. That's where I worked as a tech writer. And he was a colonel in the Air Force, a nuclear physicist. And we wrote a novel basically about a murder inside the high tech government research lab, which has deals with all sorts of security guards and clearances. So the FBI investigator can't even investigate the murder scene because he doesn't have clearance to go in there. And so we tried to really develop as much real details about a government research lab as possible. And that's the first book in a series featuring the same FBI investigator. I've got Jonathan Mayberry's first V-Wars book, his a series of horror kind of vampire virus and people fighting against it. That's a great one. Dean Wesley Smith has something called An Easy Shot. Matt Buckman has Two Chef. The reason it's called the Pulse Pounders thriller bundle is I edited an anthology called Pulse Pounders, which is all thriller stories of all different types. That anthology is in there. So you get like 15 thriller stories in there as well. And like some serial killer books and good adventure action books. It's a great bunch of novels for you to read for a bargain price. You can download them all on whichever e-reading device you have.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Okay, so that was a brilliant interview, but where can people find all your other books and everything else about you online?
Okay, well, my Twitter handle is the word the and then my initials, KJA. So I'm at the KJA. I've got a couple of Facebook pages. So if you look up Kevin J. Anderson, you'll find one of them. And our publishing house is Wordfire Press. So you can find wordfirepress.com and all of our books. We've got well over 200 books published and 90 some authors. So we hope that you'll check it out. And again, help support the indie authors and the Challenger Center charity, and we'll raise some money and get you some good books to read.
Thanks so much for your time, Kevin. That was great.
Great. Thanks, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.